It's Thursday, November 19th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 170 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
Today, the part of podcaster number 3 will be played by Wayne.
Oh, wow. I don't even know how to respond to that. I'm Pat.
Good response.
Okay.
Fear the Con 3 coming up.
Well, oh, my God. Is it like a steamroller?
Yeah, well, from our standpoint. But yeah, for those of you who don't actually have to go through the rigmarole of trying to set this con up, Fear the Con 3 is coming up March 12th and 13th. It's a Friday and Saturday.
It's our con. We should know.
Yeah, I think it's the 12th and 13th.
Because it's right. It's the weekend before St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. You know, before being involved with it, I kept thinking, you know, this thing can't come soon enough. Now being involved and as excited as I am, there's not a lot of time.
So we have some details on Fear the Con, the wing night beforehand, and the social stuff that we're going to do this year afterward. You can find at least some brochure information at fearthecon.com. We are in the process right now of building the full site, which is going to have ticketing and sign up and all that stuff. We're hoping to have it rolled out by the end of November, but either way, it's not up there yet. All I'll say right now is just information, but the venue's been reserved. Mm-hmm. So Fear the Con 3 will be March 12th through 13th. Fearthecon.com has some additional information. Mm-hmm. So just be sure to keep up with it. Now, last episode, I came to find out we're going to have a snow cone machine this year.
Yes, we are.
Mikey Mason's going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, is there anything else? Because I'm not keeping up on the minutiae.
Any other surprises? No, we're going to keep them as a surprise.
So there's no other teasers you've got?
There might be, but they're going to be just that. It's just going to be something I'm going to casually drop in conversation like, well, oh, by the way, Dan, we got a snow cone machine. It'll be like, oh my God, because Dan loves his snow cones.
If we can come up with a halfway decent recipe, we may have mini donuts as well.
Oh, yeah, we have a donut maker.
You know what I'm still open for? Maybe we'll do it at Fear the Con 5, since that'll be the last one.
Why will it be the last one?
Because it will be in March of 2012, and the world will not be here.
Yeah, yeah.
And come March of 2013. So you've got 3 Fear the Cons left. This one, 4, and 5. So if you can't come to this one, you better be prepared to come to 4.
That's right. Never doubt voodoo science.
Yeah.
But I'm shooting for maybe Fear the Con 5, our last one, donkey basketball.
Wow.
You know, I got really excited when you said donkey, but then it was basketball. Damn it.
Donkey balling. Would you prefer that?
Now it will be a donkey show.
That's getting better.
Man, we'll have donkey basketball and PETA protesters.
The end
and
of the world
pad.
Cannot come soon enough.
What would you do if you knew that tomorrow was the end of the world? And I'm talking like sun's going to blow up. No survivors. No chance. Can't stop
two
it.
Two chicks
boom.
At the same time.
What if you can't find two chicks?
Well, the world's about to end. People might be crossing lines they wouldn't otherwise cross. All right. So anyways, Fear the Con 3 coming up. We have some follow-up subjects from last episode. First off, we talked about why Chad should quit smoking weed because it's affecting his memory.
What? You know what? I have never smoked weed in my entire life.
Maybe you should start.
Never once.
But we talked extensively about how, Wayne, you were going to
run. Wayne has smoked huge amounts of weed.
Mm-hmm. Between all the alcohol I drink?
All the alcohol, the chicks, all the blow.
Hey, but it's for the glaucoma.
That's right.
It's okay.
I can honestly say I have never touched a drug of any kind. Mm. An illegal drug of any kind.
Yeah, illegal.
I've taken medications, you know. Sure. Probably not enough.
We talked about how Wayne was running a brand new game for the first time, which was, of course, Mutants and Masterminds. And this past Sunday, we ran that game.
Well, and part of it.
Wayne, I was wondering if you could give something of a post-mortem on this. Talk about what went right, what went wrong, what'd you learn, and approach this from the standpoint of not per se a con game you're preparing. And I realize that fares into the picture, but more running a brand new system for the first time. How did this play out?
Well, postmortem is actually a good way to put that. Basically, because it was a new system, because I was so worried about the rules, I was so worried about combat, and so worried about getting the character sheets created, I spent so much time focused on the game system that I let some of the things that I wanted to do in my story fall to the wayside. I wanted to come in with that whole character sheet of this is your character's personality, this is the information about them. I had all this story worked out in my head, and I didn't spend enough time thinking about how to get it out there. So basically, once we got started, everyone had their characters. We got going a little while, and I realized right away that I was choking. I don't know if everyone else felt the same way or not, but for me, I felt like I was choking, and I wasn't getting the feel I was looking for. So at that point, I just wanted to call it. I didn't want to continue through the whole thing, because the story I have, the overall story, I'm very confident in. The characters I'm very confident in, but I wasn't presenting it the way I wanted to, and I was afraid that if I continued down that path, if we forced our way through it, even if it got better, I would be giving up my big reveal, and then I wouldn't be able to rerun it with a new beginning.
You know, what you're describing is absolute human nature of misapplying energy, that we find something we worry about to the point that we let that exclude other things we should be worrying about. Certainly when you try to run a brand new game, there's an enormous amount of pressure to get the rule system right, to know what you're doing, to explain the options to the players, to be prepared for actions that players who are more familiar with the system than you are might attempt to take. But personally, I would be far more forgiving of a game master not quite getting the system right, making some screw-ups, looking some things up, slowing the game down, whatever, if there was a solid story. And I'm not saying this to pick on you, Wink. So I said, well, I think what you did is a perfectly normal human thing. I mean, I did this at Fear the Con, too. I was so worried about the con itself, I didn't prepare my games at all. And this is a totally normal human thing to do. But I think there's a great object lesson in here for anyone that's considering busting out a new system for their group, which is do not forget the basics. I mean, don't forget all those lessons you've learned through experience about how to tell a good story, how to make good NPCs, how to keep the PCs engaged. Because, you know, chasing the rules too hard can be putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, I basically took it for granted going in that I would be able to describe the settings, and I have this whole big, vast thing in my head, and I took it for granted that I'd be able to get it out there, and it didn't start out like I would have hoped.
So how did the feedback go? I mean, I remember that you solicited feedback, and we...
Oh, yeah, I got a ton of feedback, both at the game, email afterwards, and... Pretty much a lot of the feedback basically cemented what I was already thinking, and I've completely rewritten the beginning of the game, and because I didn't give away the end, I still have a chance down the line once I'm ready to come back and do that.
Did you have to sort out a lot of static and noise, or was it all just pretty positive feedback?
Mostly I have pretty good feedback. I'm very happy with the feedback I got. I just have to basically, the couple things I needed to do, I needed to finish up what I had originally planned on doing, which was fleshing out the characters, getting everything out of my head, and out in front of the players, as well as now I have to build up the self-confidence to give it another go.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to say, though, you've got already an impressive amount of self-confidence. As someone who's been gaming less than a year, to attempt to GM a brand new game, to do it requesting criticism, and then to publicize the results here. So I don't think self-confidence...
It wouldn't seem right to me, because we spent a lot of last episode talking about it. It wouldn't seem right to sweep that under the rug for me. I mean, it's something we talked about quite a bit. The advice was all solid. And I think an extra piece of advice for that is, like you said, don't forget the basics.
So do you think, though, maybe in the advice, even if the advice we gave, we'll presume, was right, that perhaps it unwittingly emphasized all the wrong things? That we were so worried about making sure your car's battery's right that we never bothered to say put gas in the tank.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Plenty of gas in the tanks around here, I'm telling you.
Wayne, moving away from GMing a new game, let's just talk for a minute about game mastering in general. Being only your third time behind the wheel, was there anything on Sunday that came up that helped you learn or grow, or anything that you would have done differently?
Well, like I said, I have this whole idea of giving out the character sheets that have the whole background. Going in when I was creating these characters, it was going to be for a con game, I was doing pre-gen characters. Going in, I kept telling everyone as I got feedback that I was looking for a new character idea. So everyone would keep coming back with, well, this power would be cool, this power would be cool. And I kept having to come back and tell people, no, a power is not a character. It does not define a character. It is a trait of them. And that's one thing as much as I emphasize that, I fell into that trap with a couple of the characters. I had their personality in mind, but I didn't have it in the players. So that's something, either looking at NPCs or looking at custom characters or things like that, that I really was driven home, is that power set and stats do not make the character. That's not their personality.
Do you guys think that that was unusually strong because of the fact it's a comic book game? I know certainly in any game that has archetypes or classes, it does become very easy to define someone by their powers.
Fightor, Mr. Wizard.
Yeah, or even outside of that, it becomes fairly easy to define someone by combination of race and career. But do you think, though, that maybe running a superheroes game, because of the fact that what we think of, at least at first blush with most superheroes, is we think of what it is they do, not who they are.
I think that it can be a unique problem, but it shouldn't be. I think it tends to be one. I mean, when you say superhero, well, okay, what superhero are you playing? Think of a superhero. I think the tendency is that most people think of, what powers do I have? What is the superhero? And then they start working back from there. How did I get these superpowers? And it makes the superhero very power-based, which is kind of what superhero comics are like.
Yeah, and as I was passing out the character sheets, that's actually what I was asking. I've got a super speeder, I've got a blaster, I've got a, you know.
I mean, in most role-playing games, though, aren't you playing a superhero? Aren't you playing someone who is a bit more than your average dude?
This is why I will always love the Nightbane character creation system. As much grief as we have Palladium over their games, they had the system in Nightbane where one step at a time, you rolled randomly your character's appearance and powers in his or her supernatural form. And I tell you, you know, some of these things wouldn't quite care a superhero game, but I think most of them would. And it'd be a great way to start. Okay, here's who I am. This is my character. I am a guy who's living this kind of life, who has these problems, these struggles, and one day, and then start rolling the dice. And
And how many superheroes are there out there where they got to pick their own power? I don't even count Batman, because the genesis of his powers comes from his parents getting killed. He certainly didn't want or pick that.
Well, and his inherited trust fund.
Yeah, an inherited trust fund. Superman the same way. I mean, he happened to crash on a planet where the radiation's of the sun empowered him instead of weakened him. And then mutants are just born that way. They can't pick their powers.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a few, I guess.
I mean, there's a few out there where
it's just so rare.
Yeah. Well, and I think that for a role-playing game, though, it should be something more along the lines of maybe you should think up the character, the personality, the history of him, and then when you're halfway through that process, then start picking a power. I don't even know if that's really the best practice for a superhero game, but I don't know. I've just seen a lot of superheroes where they are their power.
You know, something that struck me with the superhero game, because I've never played one before, it's so different from the other type of the other role-playing systems, is the basic fact that there's no classes. Like every other game that you play, or every other role-playing game that you play, you've typically got your fighter class, your cleric, your wizard, or in sci-fi, you've got, you know, different things like that. But really, when you think about it, you don't have that in a superhero game. It's basically classless. You know, you're starting from, you know, with the person, and you've got these power sets. You've got the, you know, different powers that you can build whatever you want. You can build it out, but it's like you're not starting it that way. So for me, it's a different experience, and it's almost a little bit harder to sort of think what makes up a typical party. It's like you want to have one of these.
I think
you've got to build it for all from scratch, but that it almost makes it a little hard, because going around the table, well, okay, you know, what powers do I take that would sort of fulfill that role?
See, and I prefer classless systems, because I think the classes tend to pigeonhole you.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when I was playing D&D with Dan one time years and years ago, and you know, Dan had this sort of, well, I don't know if it was your Forgotten Realms version or something you created, and this whole world, and I had this idea that, again, we were not playing the delve a dungeon and kill and loot and kill and loot game. We were playing a game with, you know, story and everything. And I had this idea of a character that I wanted to play that was not a bard, but like a storyteller, sort of a historian, somebody who did oral history of legends and stuff, although maybe not 100% accurate histories. And he went from town to town, and that's how he made his money, and he had this wealth of knowledge and skills. And with the basic books, you were not allowed to play that. You were allowed to play a bard with all your bard powers, only you just said you went around and did all that. You couldn't construct this character. And then we had to start going outside of the core books to something. I don't even remember what it was.
There was a class creation.
And you can only make out of that class creation book combat characters. And I had to go through, and we had to house rule and work the system. And I'm sure D&D has so many books, so many supplements, official and unofficial. I'm sure somebody can send me an email with 10 PDFs of here's this character class, here's what you're talking, here's this and that, and this book and this book and this book and this supplement. But I mean, working with the tools we had.
Yeah, which
I mean, we had to
at the time. I think what we were working from was
powers and
I think this was before we started messing with that. I think this was just the class creation system that's in the second edition DMG. But like you said, the problem we hit up against was it's very much designed for.
Yeah,
I want to create a slight variation or even a meshing of the existing character archetypes. It really was not meant to...
With a focus on combat.
With a focus on combat or some combat function, like healing or sneaking or something.
And even my character, I wanted him to have combat ability because he traveled by himself from town to town in this land that had giant scorpions and dragons that eat you and things like that. So I like a classless system that really works within the setting, and I like being able to make a party that is realistic instead of people saying we are playing a group of people that was thrown together in this situation, but you're a healer, you're a tank, this guy's DPS, this guy's range support, this guy's a support class, and it's just like this engineered, contrived thing. I mean, unless you're playing like a pre-made team or a military unit or something like that, you don't always get what you want.
Yeah, and it works better in like video games because there you're actually, you have a goal with XP and things like that, and you have a goal in role-playing games, but it's a little bit different.
Well, it's a lot more open and free form, whereas in a video game, you know, if you
were trying to optimize in a video game, and you don't need to do that.
If you go off the rails in a video game, the developers cannot roll in and make content for you. So
that's the game I want to play one of these days
with the super AI director.
That right there is the reason why I will always prefer role playing games to video games. And I love video games. I've spent way too much time playing them. I own way too many of them, but I will always prefer role playing games to video games. Because there's always that end of flexibility.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if this was a role-playing game, I would not pick A, B, or C. I would pick D, which is not even an option. Mm-hmm. Or if this was a role-playing game, right now, I would stop the plot and call BS on the game master.
Yeah.
And be like, this doesn't even make sense. Why is he responding? I'm saving his village and the world from Diablo, and this is going to charge me for the sword I need to save his soul from eternal torment.
That leads to a question I was kind of wondering. Have you ever run into a situation where...
Brother, you gotta make a dime, man.
Have you ever run into a situation where... Basically, you did all this talk about freedom and the choice to do this. If you were presented that situation, you would choose C instead of A or B. Have you ever run into a situation where your players don't do that? That they're looking at the sheet and they feel that this list of what's on my sheet is all I can do, and they don't have that immediate outside of the box.
Have I had individual players like that? Yes. Have I ever GM'd for a whole group that was like that? No. They may have had their moments where they just weren't thinking. They were too stuck on the character sheet, not thinking outside of the box.
What do you do to help coax them outside that box?
Throw a grenade at them.
Good heavens, I don't know anything except you. I mean, you're trying to teach somebody the life skill of creativity. How do you teach somebody creativity? I guess if it's someone who's relatively new to the hobby or just having an off night, it just may not even be occurring to them what's possible. And so maybe just say, hey, stop for a minute. No, you don't have a spell that's going to accomplish this. But you know, if you just ask the guy, or do you remember you're stuck here because this guy won't help you, but there's a guy three towns back who's got a grudge against this guy. Maybe you ought to chase that down a little bit or something.
Well, there's a balancer right there. I mean, as a game master, how long do you leave them hanging? Because, I've seen whole groups like this where you lay out the plot, and it ultimately comes down to one of two things. It's either the players are not thinking, or you as a game master were not being clear enough about the general push of where to go or what to do next.
How do you feel about an NPC coming out and giving suggestions?
I don't have
like Gandalf? Well, you got to be real careful with that.
You got to be real careful. I don't have a problem with that. I've run a lot of games where I had an NPC that was in the party or showed up regularly, but I was always very careful. This person was not a dominating presence. They did not have obscene powers. They didn't do things while you watch, but they might have a suggestion. I sometimes use them just as a way of getting the players, hey, have you considered this? And just to kind of put the...
You're railroading me! Well, don't play my character!
And certainly there is that danger. I mean, all jokes aside, there certainly is that danger.
If you don't do it right,
if you need an expositor in the form of an NPC, there's something wrong with your game mastering. I mean, if you need somebody to just to help them out every so often when they're stuck, because you've got a weird or confusing game, that's fine. That may not be an issue. But if you need an expositor on a regular basis, there is something wrong with your game master.
What if you need an exfoliant?
Well, or a suppositor. That also might be a sign of a different problem. All right, we were talking about Chad's pseudo-bard.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings up something that I have heard for years and has always baffled me. Now, if anyone here has played an MMO, which everyone here has, I don't know about all the listeners, which I'm assuming at least a good portion of you have, you've heard the class debates. This class is better than this, that class. This class is overpowered. This class needs to be nerfed. This class needs to be buffed, blah, blah, blah. And the same type of wankery goes on in the RPG community, though it seems like at a lower pitch. It is there, but it's not the front and center discussion like it is in the MMO community.
You don't hear as much of, oh my God, why did you take that? That's a useless power. You put the enhancements in that?
Well, you do sort of get that a little bit when they introduce the whole feat system, but, you know.
There is one class, however, that seems to get endless grief, and I don't understand why. And so I did a little searching to try and find out what the problem is with this class.
It's clowns, isn't it?
And
clowns?
You're close. You're close.
It's a jackal. It's a jackal?
It's a jackal.
And Chris has coached Pat on how to was here because John apparently
a little bit. I would say that
this.
He's coached me. I'm not regurgitating what Chris said. Chris and I have similar opinions on this, I believe. And actually, his little coaching was like two sentences.
But
I have my own opinions.
The
damn it.
Topic at hand is bards. For some reason.
Like we're talking Dungeons and Dragons. TSR.
TSR or WotC.
WotC, Hasbro.
I'm talking 2.0, 3.0. And 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
not with Violet talking.
Yeah, I don't have any experience with 4.0 bards.
Yeah, I'm not talking. About
I don't
4.0.
Even. I'm sure they've been defined, but they may not have been defined. I don't know that they were defined in the original. Original 4.0.
Can I say right now?
Player's Handbook too.
I have played very little D&D in my life. I know very little about D&D rules, and I've never played a bard. So go play a bard. mean, who cares if they're overpowered? You
we'll
know you're
to
going
this.
To win anyway.
Oh, no, that's not the issue. That's the totally
I
the
found
opposite.
Categorically four complaints that are typically raised against the bard. And having played multiple bards and GM'd for people who are playing bards, none of these carry water with me.
Oh,
but they are popular views within the general RPG community.
Are you saying that the general RPG community is wrong and that you are right?
Not that bitching on the internet's a good way of taking a statistical poll, but I'm saying
you
that
know,
the people
it's worked for millions of people before you.
You know, Dan, before you even mention your four arguments that you found, I could probably almost sum it up for you in just a couple sentences,
okay.
What you're probably going to say.
Okay, I'll give you a chance to
all right,
swing
and
your
I'll see how close I come. The problem with bards, the very core of it is that the bard class is a jack of all trades, a master of none.
Mm-hmm.
You have essentially got a support class type of a character that has all these varying skills that it's okay in, but it's not potent at any of them. And furthermore, the way bards are defined in the core rule books, they just never can shine, I don't think. And because of that, they did a lot of the supplements, especially in the D&D, they did a lot of supplement work like they did with every other class. The only problem is that those other classes could be good originally, and the supplements just made them awesome. But the supplements for bards made them, I think, more manageable, more playable.
That's number two on my list.
Yeah.
They lack a niche or specialty.
Yes,
and
yes, they don't. They can't specialize.
The subpoints I put beneath this, they don't get the full end of any ability tree. For example, their spells top out at spell level 6. At least once this is
right in core. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm operating here. What I have.
And that's the way. Yes. Yeah.
So maybe a little different from version to version, but 3.5 I'm operating from. And they have many options, but because none of them reach the end of that tree, none are specifically useful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is a virtue in and of itself. People are focusing too much on the master of none and not the jack of all trades part. Here you have a class that has the second tier of attacks They're not as good as a fighter or a paladin.
No.
But they are on level with a cleric.
Yes.
They can wear light armor while still casting arcane spells. They're the only class in the game that can do this. If talking core books, I'm not getting into everybody's fluff books.
So why would a bard be able to cast a spell? I'm kind of curious.
Well, because they've got a loot.
The concept behind the bard is that these are guys who have traveled the world picking up a little bit of everything. They've learned a little bit about sword fighting. They've learned a lot of stories because of the places they've been. They've learned a little bit about spell casting, partially because it's just kind of in that bag of they've been everywhere, but also because...
I think I kind of have it now. They are basically the roadies of everyone else, so they pick up a little bit of each trade.
Well, kind of, and further than that, they have some form of a musical slash storytelling skill, and that in and of itself, that gets more into their core of their rules. They have this support type of ability through their bardic, I forget exactly what it's called, their bardic ability, that basically it bolsters the people that are around them. It
does a variety of things.
I sing you to a plus four.
Well, exactly. Yeah. They sing or whatever else like that.
But
they've got some. Then
you're going to stab.
Right, but they've also got some thievery skills too. Again, they've essentially what they did is they said, okay, we're going to take all these classes, and we're going to take 10% of each class, squish it together, and call it a bard. And that's what you've got. And I'll tell you what, Dan, on paper, I think the bard class sounds freaking awesome.
Your description actually makes it sound interesting.
It does. I mean, I will say this. I like the bard. I like the bard class. I just don't like it in execution. On paper, it seems great. It's like, wow, you've got all the support kind of thing. And I can see how you would love it, because I know that you like to play a support character. You like that role.
Well, that's
and
what
the bard can
say.
Shine at that. I think Chad would like this too, because just sort of getting a feel for the things that you've played and the things that you've talked about in these previous episodes, I think the bard class, it fits you to a T, because you have access to all these varying skills, which is something I think you like to do.
And we would hate if he did it, because he'd be singing the whole time.
The thing that Chad, the thing that you wouldn't like about the bard, though, is the mechanic. It's in, you've got all these skills, but you've got to make all these rolls, and
that's D&D.
Right, I mean, it's entrenched in that system. You have all these skills, but you've got all these skill checks that you have to make to play.
I don't mind making skill checks.
Wow, after that speech, who are you and what do you do with that?
Hey, we're talking about bards. I mean, I've made a bard, but I did it by making it. He was basically a wizard that then dual class as a fighter and had a few little thief things thrown in there. And he had a loot, because all bards have loots. If you're a true bard, it's a loot. You don't use anything else. I don't care what crap you tell me. You don't use bongo drums, because we saw how well that worked out for Matthew McConaughey. That's all I'm going to say.
I feel like applauding for some reason, and I don't really even know why.
I was thinking the same thing,
I'm going to disagree with that. I think his basic analysis of the class is correct, but I think the end sum you're coming up with is wrong. Because the thing about the bard...
You're entitled to your opinion.
It is true. They never become as good at any one task as another class will be. They will never be the swordsman that a fighter is. They will never be the spellcaster wizard is. They will never, et cetera, et cetera. You go on down the line like that. They do have one or two unique abilities, which I'll come back to in a second. But the thing about a bard is the fact that they are never useless. Because of the fact that they have a little bit of everything, if you've got a guy down and you kind of need to heal, or you've got that enemy that's not being affected by normal weapons but would be affected by magic, or you've got a sea of goblins that you just got to hack through, the bard can fill all of these roles. If a player is playing a bard, there should never come a point in the game where they have run out of things to do. Now, granted, they may not be as good at any of them as somebody else, but in my mind, if you're that one-track minded in your play style, I don't know. That really wouldn't fit how I'd want to play a game.
No,
anyway,
let me stop you.
You know, Dan, I got to stop both of you.
Okay.
I have to say... the content of what you guys are saying, I don't know, nor do I care, because I don't play D&D. But I have to say that I didn't feel like applauding after your speech. I think that Pat had more of that sort of bardic charisma going on.
You know what I thought
after
your speech?
He made all this check. So,
what I thought after Dan's speech was the whole time he's going on about you may not be the best fighter, you may not be this. The whole time I'm thinking, going to sneak up behind you. You're the best fighter. Stab, stab, stab. Now I am. Completely irrelevant, but that's what I was thinking.
Here's the other thing. The two powers they have that nobody else has. One is the bardic song ability. The ability to
woo the women.
Literally, yes. I mean, some of the stuff's kind of worthless, and I'm going to admit that up front. But some of the stuff like mass suggestion, if you play a game that has any amount of role-playing in it, this is an extremely useful ability.
They have Dan's bedroom voice.
Yeah.
They got a beef up in 3.5 from 3.0. But nonetheless, they brought some things to the table. But more than that, and once again, this may have no use in a dungeon crawl, but in a game that has any amount of role-playing, bardic knowledge.
But it's Dungeons and Dragons. That's the setting. Dungeons and Dragons.
Bardic freaking knowledge. You have the ability to potentially know anything.
Even things that your character could not possibly know.
The role gets harder. But keep in mind, the shtick of the character is what you do is go around hearing things. Mm-hmm. And so you simply say, you know what? I've never been to this place, but I've heard stories about it. I've never met this man, but I did meet his ex-wife.
Oh, yes. He met his ex-wife
many times.
If you're looking purely at a combat map in a dungeon crawl, that has no use or very minimal use at any rate. But if you have a game that's got a lot of role-playing in it, a lot of interactions in the town, a lot of mystery and intrigue, that is almost game-breaking powerful. Because you have a stab at knowing anything. And on top of that, you are backed up by so many charisma skills and your bardic abilities, which also are charisma-based.
That's a pretty impressive chart you have there. You gonna put that on the resource page?
No, actually you can find this online at the, it's a D&D wiki. I can link that off the show notes.
Yes, do that.
So if anyone wants to look at this, yeah. But anywho.
Just rub it against the microphone.
You have all these charisma-based abilities for inspiring people or doing suggestion or whatever. Your ability to understand and manipulate a situation,
you know, it's completely
off the freaking charts.
You know, it's completely different, but when you say that, the first thing I'm thinking is like Fallout 3, because I'm playing through that now as the ultimate talkie guy. I don't have anything role-playing game-wise to compare it to, but in there, essentially, I'm walking into any situation using my charisma and my speech. I'm guessing this is kind of similar, only very different.
It is, and you're actually touching on another subject that actually comes up with the bard class that is problematic, and it is this. You've mentioned the big one. Bards need charisma, but also bards need dexterity, because that's another thing that they leave.
Because they tend to wear lighter no armor.
Well, and there's also some feats that allow them to use their dexterity scores instead of strength. So, and they're not going to be strong. So they, charisma and dexterity, and then constitution, they need it because, again, they're not as powerful as a cleric even. They don't have the hit dice. They've got I think they're a D6
hit
dice.
Yeah, they're
D6. So they're weak on that, too. So constitution's important. So right there, you've got three skills that are really important to them, where in some of the other class, like fighter or even wizard, you're really concentrating on at most two, and the others are sort of
fighter and wizard
skills.
Maybe, but paladin, you're in the same boat.
Well,
cleric, you're in the same boat, because remember that all your turning stuff is charisma based.
It's
mainly wisdom, but you still need strength, con, and charisma. Paladin gets the same thing, so I don't think it's uniquely.
I think on average they have like one more skill or one more stat that they have to focus on, and that starts to spread you thin too. Again, it's just one of the things that sort of, you know, because you're saying these are all important things, and it'd be great to have a 16 to 18 in all those, but you're not going to be able to do it.
One of the other things I saw raised against them was that they're absurdly out of place singing at their enemies.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a lack of imagination. If the only performance skill you can come up with is singing, because remember, in at least 3.0 and 3.5, it's a form of performance. It can be oration. It can be
early as order. As long as it involves a lute.
Early order of the stick made these jokes great, because one of their characters is a bard.
Yeah, Nail.
No, or not Elon, Nail. Elon. Nail's his brother.
Yeah.
And, they made that where they're sneaking around and they're
third level inspire competence. You could sing a song to improve somebody's sneak skill.
Yeah, and that's what he did. He sung a song, and they kept telling him to shut up. And he's doing one that they're looking around, they're not seeing anything, they're in an empty room. And then he starts singing and, like, perception. And all of a sudden they see all these monsters surrounding him. They're like, shut up right now. And then he shuts up and they don't see him anymore.
But, you know, actually, another thing that the bards, as far as their magic goes, they have a lot of illusionary magic. I think that's something that like you might enjoy playing, Chad.
Don't tell me what I will and won't like. You're not the boss of me. You're not the GM of me. What am I, your NPC?
I'm suggesting that you might enjoy it because I think you like to tell a story, and I think especially with illusions, you kind of have to set up like, well, what are you going to make an illusion of? Mm-hmm. And you have to spin it. You have to tell it. You have to sell it. I think you would be great at that. I think you would enjoy it.
We've hit on the first three complaints. The one we kind of did without mentioning it directly, which is number one, they're outright useless. Number two, they lack a niche or specialty. We did number four, they're absurdly out of place seeing at their enemies. Number three, and this is the only one
that has
some traction with me.
This character is absolutely useless, and we're not taking it from the paradigm that this is a straight combat dungeon crawl. This is a well-rounded role-playing game. I mean, that's like saying, my fighter with the low strength and one arm is totally worthless. Well, yeah.
I wouldn't hire you.
He sucks in a fight, but it's a character. Is the character interesting to play? Well, do people like him?
Yeah, but even from a combat standpoint, I don't think that's the case with a bard. You have a flex character. Mm-hmm. You have a character who may not be min-maxed for anything, but can fill so damn many roles. Once again, I have played bards in D&D. I have GM'd for bards in D&D. And this issue has never come up, which is why it absolutely blew my mind when we started doing Fear the Boot. And I mentioned something about a bard, and John, like, oh, you know, the bards suck or whatever. And I thought that was just John's quirk. But then I start kind of seeing this all over the internet, and it blew my mind. I have never understood it. But number three, and this is the only one that has some traction with me. I don't know that I totally follow it, but there is some truth to it, I think. Which is, they're not bardish enough. That too much of what they do,
they can sing you into stealth. Well, how much? What do you want them to juggle you into bartering with somebody? I mean, come on.
I'd love to explain this to you. May I?
No. I'm trying to think of another clever one, like spin plates to blacksmith or something. I don't know. I'm out. Go ahead. I'm done.
Use the finger on martini glasses to play Jingle Bells until the monster's dead. Kill the mini-headed Hydra.
Yes, yes.
Like Hugh Hefner.
What?
But.
No, never mind. I'm not asking. Continue.
But that they're not. The class has a track of specifically bard abilities. Bardic knowledge and some of their song abilities, or their performance abilities. They want to be songs.
Pickpocket, drop pants.
But too many of their abilities are cherry-picked from the lower to mid-levels of other classes.
Right, yeah.
They have some wizard magic, some cleric magic, some armor, some weapons, some thief skills, and there's not a lot that they bring to the table that is distinctly bardic, that it really seems like their performance-based skills or their knowledge-based skills or the things they've picked up through their travels do not play a sufficiently central role to the class progression or power set. That one, I can agree with. I think bardic knowledge is useful as hell. I think their other abilities can be useful if you know how to play them. But I will absolutely agree that it would be nice if in the earlier editions, and I hear they fixed this in the fourth edition. I've not seen Player's Handbook 2, so I don't know for sure. But at least in the early editions, they did not give them enough that was unique to their class, that they brought to the table and nobody else could, or really gave them the feel of that traveling performer. So that one, I'll give some traction
to.
Well,
I totally agree with you on that, because, and this goes back to what we sort of talked about earlier in the episode with talking about party composition, and be it as it may, it does come up in role-playing. I mean, you know, it's not as hardcore as like in a video game or an MMO. I think those have been very bad, you know, example-wise for that, but still, you're going to think about it. It's like, well, you want to have somebody that can heal our wounds whenever we get into it. You also want to have somebody that's good at fighting, et cetera, et cetera. If you've already got a well-rounded party, if you've got a fighter, a cleric, a wizard, and a thief, you really don't need a bard. Now, on the other hand, if your party lacks one of those, say, core four or whatever, then a bard can fill that niche fairly well. So it is kind of sort of situational class. And I also want to go back to something you said earlier about the fact that, you know, since there's no specialization, and if you're that one, you know, if you're that one dimensional as a character, I think that's a little unfair talking about a player character that way. And look at it more along these lines. I would say that a bard type of a character class in the support role is a better class for somebody that's more experienced in role playing to play.
Now, what about from the opposite aspect?
What about if it's a short game, having a bard as a way to learn what you might like to do? Because if you're cherry picking everything, you can get a little bit of a feel for what each one does and figure out that, no, I don't want to be the healer. I want to be the fighter, and I'm not good enough at that.
Yeah, I personally say it would not be a good idea because the bard does not shine in any of them well enough to give you any
example. I'm actually going to agree with Wayne. I think he's maybe on to something. But that point aside, I should probably clarify something I said earlier, which is I'm not saying there's anything wrong with somebody who plays a min-maxed character class or a min-maxed character within a class. It's just a play style choice. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is if someone comes to me and says, any character that is not min-maxed to a particular thing is useless, I think is just as short-sighted or narrow-minded as me saying anyone who plays something min-maxed is wrecking my game. And that's more, I don't know that I really was as clear on that as I should have been.
Yeah, and I wasn't either. I wasn't making accusations, but a real life example for me is that in my role playing, and it, like my wife is a role player as well, and she has had experiences with characters more like
a
bard
class.
She's
a role player.
She is. And she doesn't like the bard class because she is more suited towards something that a specialization, be it a fighter or a magic user.
Right, and there's
they
nothing
have something,
wrong with that.
And because with those classes, they have something that they are very good at. It's their chosen profession, per se. They're good at fighting, or they're very good at magic, or they're very good at clerical spells. And because of that, it's like, you know your niche. You know what you're good at, and that's what you can focus on doing. On the flip side of that is like a bard type of a character where you've got all these things that you can do. And I think it takes more work to be able to really be good at that. I don't even think that I'm always that good at that kind of thing to do it all the time. I think it can be hard to pull that off. So that's what I was trying to get at, in the fact of don't try to tackle this if you're just brand new to role playing or something like that.
Or if you just
it's just something to work
some,
on.
If you prefer a role. If you need a role, that's cut. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's just the way you prefer to play, the bard is probably not for you. But I guess what I was getting at is I don't like the reverse, where somebody who prefers having a role wants everybody in these cut and dry roles, looks at the bard, who's basically a flex class, until you get back to town where this guy really becomes a pimp, maybe literally. But in combat is a flex class. But because of the fact that you're not a tank healer DPS, you're useless.
And I think that confusion comes in the fact that basically what you're trying to do is you're putting this type of a character in with where every other class is a specialized class. Every other class in the game is very good at one or two things. And then you've got this one guy that just seems like he's gimped. That's why people don't like him. That's why I don't like the class as it is. Like I said, beyond the core, they've actually addressed this with all the supplements that they are so wondrous at handing out. And actually, I know if you really min-max out a bard with all the additional supplements you can get, you can do some sick things. Like, I know one in particular is Dragon's Breath bardic ability, where essentially they do their thing and everybody in the party adds an additional 6d6 or 9d6 fire damage to all their attacks. So you want to talk about a support character. I mean, it's like this one guy starts doing his thing and all of a sudden your entire party is able to do four times as much damage as they normally can. So, yeah,
But how does he feel about himself after he does that?
He feels awesome.
Does he?
Because, he gets all that, all that road ahead.
He feels warm. Does he feel he needs to do that to make himself more of a person
out watching him perform, he just handpicks them out of the audience and they come backstage.
It's
truly awesome.
It's his way of inflaming the situation.
Chicks love loots. That's all I'm saying.
Do you think it's an issue of playstyle is really what it comes down to?
I do. I mean, like I said, I like the class on paper. I think it offers a good variety of things to be able to play. It just takes some work to do it.
As I talked to people and as I started scanning forums in various places, trying to figure out what the beef with bards was, all I really came up with was some people had bitches that, at best, they have some truth to them. There may be, they've kind of got a point. I don't see it all the way through. But there's some truth to their observation. But the end, it just struck me as these are people who are treating an RPG like an MMO.
Right.
Because, like I said, having GM'd for and played multiple bards, I have never had a player or been that player who was playing the bard and I felt useless. It's never happened.
Like I said, I never realized and really got into this whole min-maxing until you guys pulled me into the whole MMO stuff. before that, I'd never really seen anything that bad. But geez, you get into that and all of a sudden it's like you're just inundated with this whole thing of, well, this is why this class sucks. And this is why this one rules. And this one is to suck sore. And, you know, all this. I was like, oh, my God, are you kidding?
And you know what? The MMOs that you've played with us aren't that bad.
I know
in that.
I know.
I mean,
yeah, I didn't play World of Warcraft. And I know that's probably the worst. For that,
the I Survived Baron's Chat t-shirt that the Blizzard people make is awesome because I did, in fact, survive Baron's Chat when I first started playing.
I think that sort of has carried over into, I think that's where you're getting a lot of this.
Fascinating, though, because of the way that there's been kind of this boomerang effect where fantasy role-playing games inspired MUDs, MUDs inspired MMOs. And now MMOs are coming back and impressing values upon RPGs. Yeah.
Oh my God, you have no idea what you just said. Now Edition Wars. You're like, oh my God, you're saying 4.0 is like an MMO, you sick bastard. And then you're going to get like a whole other people.
Well, it's not even that, but
he's so right.
And no, then, I think he is. It's not exactly that 4.0 is an MMO, but you're right. I mean, it's that whole mindset. It's the evolution of the game. You know, you've got into that. Now you've got these...
You know what I find funny?
It starts to fall back onto the role playing.
What I find funny is people say, you know, 4.0 is an MMO. It's a video game. It's an MMO. And I just sit here thinking, and I don't know. I've never read the rules. Like I said, I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm not a D&D player. But didn't they make 3.0 into an MMO? Isn't that what D&D Online is? Isn't it a modified 3.0
Yeah, rule set? But it's so heavily modified.
I don't know. I've heard it's pretty close. I heard that they had to change magic to get...
Well, that changed,
so that you can cast more than two spells a day.
They changed magic. They changed experience. There's, of course, no role-playing at all. I mean, you can't... I mean, I'm sure, okay, the players can role-play amongst themselves, but it's still fundamentally... A kill and loot, kill and loot, kill and loot.
Well, that's what D&D is meant to be. It's not how it's played by most people, I think.
No, I see what you're saying. I think, I don't know. I guess what I would say is D&D 3.0 did work for video games, but the fact that it worked in a video game, I don't think is a fair way of saying that that's...
No, I just think it's ironic. I think that most people are 4.0. Yeah, 4.0 is an MMO. Well, didn't they make an MMO out of 3.0?
Yeah. Okay, I follow.
I think there's a lot of focus on MMOs, but to be honest, I think the first impact was probably more the role-playing games, just the single-player ones, the stuff like the Final Fantasies and all of those that have come through. I think those have had impact, too.
I talked to this dude, man, and God, I don't remember anything about the conversation or who the guy was or even where I had it at, but...
You're going to tell us now, what do you remember? Because I can't think of what you would remember from that.
I remember the conversation we had. One part of it was he was saying that he was not a RPG player, but he was a video game player. And we were actually talking about video games overshadowing and replacing RPGs. And he says that he was a video game player. He never played RPGs. And he got into playing these video game RPGs, and he wanted to see what the genesis of this was. Where did this come from? Where did these concepts originate? And so he looked into it, and he found out about tabletop role-playing games, and thus got into tabletop role-playing games. And to him, it's like, that's how it should be. He doesn't understand why more people don't follow that route. I mean, I think I understand why more people don't. You know?
I do, too, and it's a really cynical answer, and so I'll just leave it at that be. But by coincidence, this was something I've been thinking about talking about for a while, but by coincidence, a gentleman by the name of Winston, he's kind of a friend of the show, he's come out to both Fear the Cons. He runs something over at Critical Press Media. They're doing a contest surrounding Bards, which is going to go completely contrary to what we're talking about here, but their contest is to create a Bard that is min-max to basically function as a replacement for one of the other classes. And I don't know, they've got rules on this about which source books you're allowed to use and which you aren't. But for the winner, they're going to give away a CD set of Spirit Blade, and then they'll also publish the character.
Spirit Blade?
It's a book.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. And it's a books on tape sort of thing that has a bard character in it that they really liked. So
cool.
And then they're also going to publish the character in something. If you're interested, I'll link it in the show notes. If you're not interested, then hey, have a smoke break instead. Unless you're in a state where I'm not allowed to suggest you go smoke, in which case, go have an apple.
You're right.
Must keep mouth shut.
I had a teacher going through college that basically he would, you know, every day he would tell us, you know, Never smoke. Always take the smoke breaks. If they have a right to go out and get their break in the middle of the day, so do you.
Buy one pack of cigarettes and just hold the cigarette. Never even light it. I've known people that have done that at jobs just because it pissed them off that smokers got breaks. Nobody else did.
Funny.
So they just buy one pack of cigarettes and they just keep holding cigarettes. So.
I didn't even bother with that. I just walk out with them.
And you know what? Smokers are pretty damn social.
Some of them.
Well, I'll give my little anecdote. I used to work at a grocery store and we had a smoking break room, which was, I mean, looked and smelled like an ashtray. It's pretty gross. And we had a non-smoking break room, which was clean and pristine and fresh air. And both were about the same size and had the same accoutrements in it. And I tell you what, you go in the non-smoking break room, it is business. The business of eating, reading the newspaper, reading your book, and then leaving or whatever. And the smoking break room is wall-to-wall people talking and chatting, and only half of them are smokers. And it's all social talking. It's like going to a bar.
Huh. I guess they didn't learn the trick of reading in the bathroom.
I've
not many do.
No, I've never learned. I'm too polite to the people that might handle my books. As such, I've never picked up that habit. So
I believe that there should be a book in the bathroom.
A burnable book in the bathroom. It's a great way to spread.
Well, what do you do? Are you wiping your ass then reading the book? Because your order of operations is totally incorrect. You should come in with clean hands and put the book down with clean hands, then dirty your hands, then wash your hands.
I can tell you, Dan, you've held a book that I've taken in the bathroom.
I know what it is.
All right, so anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. Chad, do you want to sing us out?
See ya, the closing the podcast.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.